On today's episode of On the Clock with Kristen Peek, the big day is finally here. Lamar Hurd and Tom Haverstraw join me to talk about the top three surprises from the first round of the NBA draft. And we take a look ahead to the second round as well and the loaded 2025 NBA draft class coming up. Let's get into it. Welcome to On the Clock with Kristen Peek. I'm Kristen Peek, NBA draft analyst for Yahoo Sports. The first round of the 2024 NBA draft has just concluded, and joining me to recap everything that happened is Lamar Hurd, Portland Trail Blazer TV analyst, the starting point guard for Oregon State from 2002 to 2006. Okay.
I didn't know if he was going to the bio like that, KP.
And Tom Haverstraw.
Did not play for Oregon State for 4 years. Yeah.
Portland Trail Blazers broadcast statistical analysis, Mr. Stats, formerly at ESPN, currently covers the NBA for Yahoo Sports as a contributor, as well as his Substack, Tom the Finder. Okay, you guys, big night. Mm-hmm. What I like to call my Super Bowl, my Christmas, my graduation. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved everything about it. Let's get into it with the three biggest surprises of the first night of the 2024 NBA draft. All right, first... Number one surprise. I feel like you guys know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, you want me to lay it out for you, KP?
Please lay it out for me.
Zach Edey, okay. Number 9 to the Memphis Grizzlies.
Correct.
Now, that was a surprise to you. Why?
I'll tell you why. The entire season, I can remember, you guys, I'm going to tell you a story. I remember being at the Maui Invitational, which took place in Honolulu this year, and I was getting on the shuttle, and there was a couple, and they were Purdue fans. And they're like, oh, what do you do? And I said, oh, I cover the NBA draft. I'm here scouting players. And they're like, oh, well, you must be here scouting Zach Edey. He's going to be a star in the NBA. And I told this couple.
KP, don't tell me you went off on a couple.
No, I told this couple. I was like, no chance. And they're like, oh, what? And I said, his game does not translate to the NBA.
You crushed them just
with
they're
the
on
way,
vacation.
They just trying to enjoy
Purdue,
some Purdue
it's Honolulu.
Basketball. You can let them live just for that one little trip that they were on.
When I think about that conversation, I know the husband is probably like, oh, I told her. That he was going to be a good NBA player. Mm-hmm. And whether I'm wrong or whether I'm right in the terms of why his game doesn't translate, I don't think it does. And here's why. When we look at the NBA and we look at the center position, and I know there's always a different case for every scenario. There's always that outlier, right? But we look at the center position. We look at what's working right now in the NBA with the 7-foot-plus players. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Victor Wembanyama. I'm even talking about Chet Holmgren. Paolo Banchero, who's not 7 feet, but he's close
dynamic
enough.
Dynamic big, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And now Alex Sarr, who went number 2 to the Washington Wizards. When you look at the way the game is played, floor spacers can bring the ball up, can shoot the three, can move like a guard. I mean, that's the future of the NBA. And at nine, pick number 9, the Grizzlies go. You have one of the fastest point guards in the NBA in Ja Morant. Mm-hmm. You want to play fast paced. I love Jaren Jackson in the tandem with him. I cannot for the life of me understand why they drafted Zach Edey. Please convince me. Go.
Lamar, I'll just say this.
Okay.
Steven Adams isn't there anymore. They need a big.
Yeah, they got rid of him for a reason.
But they were good with him. They were really good with him.
Okay, how many years ago were they good? Did they win a championship?
Well, okay.
You're trying to win a championship. And what's on the board, there's going to be dudes in this draft. What was left on the board at 9 and taking Zach Edey? I had a really big problem with that.
What would have been a more sure pick for Memphis?
I would have taken Khalil Ware. We talked about him and how that's like a great fit for Miami. I would have taken Khalil Ware. His improvement that he made, more of a pick and pop, has way better footwork defensively. Oh. And I think he would have been great alongside Jaren Jackson. Having two mobile bigs on the floor at the same time, where you don't have to limit his minutes because he's not 7'4" and 300 pounds and you're worried about his durability. Yeah. To me, Zach Edey going 9 might be, and someone corrected me. I said it was one of the worst picks in the NBA draft. And someone said, he's not even the worst pick in Memphis Grizzlies history.
Oh.
Because remember, they took Hacine Thabeet at number two.
At number two, yeah. Yes. Yes.
So I stand corrected. Very well point made, Twitter. I stand corrected. But I'm not on the Zach Eady train at
all. So I would say I can't necessarily, I guess, disagree with your points because I don't know. I don't know that he will work out. But I also don't know that he won't work out.
Correct.
And I feel like you're coming at it from an angle of like, he's
half
not the guy.
Empty, correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I feel like the Grizzlies are looking at it like big body, screen setter. Their best player is their point guard. He's automatically getting their point guard open whenever they need him to get open. Roll, good hands.
He can't roll. He can't roll.
See,
Lamar.
Now that part, that's what I don't understand. What big guy can't
we
roll?
Watched the film. Me and Tom went
like
on
he's
Synergy.
Unable to?
It's just slow. It's really slow. Sure, he is very coachable. Fine, he can roll. But if you are watching his film and you are drafting him as a high pick and roll center, he is not that. He is the back to the basket, Shaq, Hakeem, great. But I don't think we're trending backwards. We're moving forwards with more hybrid.
In the NBA, you need to be able to throw multiple dynamics if you want to go far in the NBA playoffs.
Yes,
you have to have not just fastball, mm-hmm. fastball. You need to throw some off-speed pitches. Yeah. That, I mean, the guy did play baseball, and he only picked up a basketball 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he is, very by definition, a late bloomer here in the sport, where he's got not just 6 years of basketball where he's a two-time collegiate player of the year. He is built as this throwback big, right? In a league that is trying to get faster, three-point shooting. They have that in Jaren Jackson Jr. If they want to go to the modern day five
faster,
spread out
big, yes,
four,
small
they've got that
lineup.
In Jaren Jackson Jr., former defensive player of the year who can shoot and can, you know, run the ball up the floor. What they don't have is a monster big that they can help get buckets in the half court.
Yeah.
When things slow down, he might be in a couple years a go-to guy on the post that right now he's not there, right?
Yeah.
He's not there because he's...
I see the vision. I see the vision. I see, because to me, it tests your player development staff. Like, so even if he can't roll right now or isn't good at it, why? Why is that the case? Is it certain roles? Is it when he rolls, opens up right foot first, left foot second? Is that a bad side for him, whereas the other side might be different? These are all things I don't know because I don't watch him the way that the Grizzlies watch him, where they feel like we see something that we can do with this dude that we can't teach the height, we can't replicate the height, the size. He's willing to work hard. Like, there's certain things that if you believe in yourself as a coaching staff, a developmental staff, he's got the things that you want, that you say, just give me that stuff and then we'll fix the rest, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're just kind of looking at it that way. And then also the game does come around a little bit. It's like fashion. You know, skinny jeans, they're out one time. Now they're back in and they're out. All the suits used to be the baggiest things ever. And now it's got to be tailored. I feel like the game, like it's kind of how Tom is saying, it is a situation where, yes, we just watched the Celtics win, being able to play small. The Celtics, to me, they are never a great example because they are so unique. Like their roster.
You can't out Celtics and Celtics.
Yeah, nobody else has that.
Yeah.
So they're winning right now. And as long as they keep what they have going on, they will be expected to win again. But there are certain matchups where the Minnesota Timberwolves were able to compete with the Nuggets because they had the size to do it.
Yes.
You know, like, and so for certain matchups, Edie, maybe not next season, maybe not the second season, but
The third or the fourth or the fifth.
See, but I don't know that though.
Nobody knows.
But there's certain beliefs. So
you could say that about any player though in this draft when they're drafted. Okay.
But you don't have a belief in Edie though.
All right. Let's agree to disagree.
Okay. Okay.
I am half glass full on Edie.
And we'll watch.
You two are half glass. Or no, I'm half glass empty. You two are half glass full. Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yes.
Sounds
okay.
Good.
The other prospect, Ron Holland to Detroit at number five. Now, this was a pick that was widely thought to be favored to his teammate, Modest Buzelis. Mm-hmm. I think everyone thought, oh, okay, Modest Buzelis as a lock at number five. And they took a right turn real quick, and they took his teammate, Ron Holland. Still very young. You mentioned 18 years old.
I mean, that's all upside.
Was a five-star prospect coming out of high school, originally committed to Texas, decided to go the G League Ignite route, was their top scorer there, but very turnover-prone, doesn't move well off the ball. But he is a bucket. You like him, Tom.
Yeah, I like him. It's a surprise, though. I mean, you're getting Jaden Ivey and this dude in the open court with Cade Cunningham. Whoever comes in to coach that team, they better be going up and down and trying to run teams out of the gym. Yeah. That's not the way that Monty Williams wanted to play last season. And Trajan Langdon coming from the New Orleans Pelicans. Like, they don't have a Zion Williamson right now on this roster, but they do have athleticism in Ron Holland. He's also got a 6'11 wingspan, very long. Mm-hmm. He's out of control at times. Like, he gets after it. But to me, this is a long-term project for the Detroit Pistons and the fans who watched a 28-game losing streak this year. They don't want to wait any longer.
That's where I was going, Stro. A team loses 28 games consecutively. There's a culture shift that just needs to happen.
Yeah.
And so they've started that process with the coaching staff, front office, and other changes that they're making. But they might just feel like, we need somebody that got a chip on his shoulder. And when
he
Ron
hates
Holland,
losing, by the way. He hates
I believe
losing.
That. And he did a lot of losing at the Ignite.
Yes,
and
was you know very what humbled
else,
in that.
What else he hated was people saying that this draft was a weak draft.
Yes.
He was vocal about that. So he's going into Detroit with a chip on his shoulder to an organization that needs that, like people that actually hate losing, that after the loss, you're not on IG posting a picture of you walking in an arena. It's like, no, it's not fun and games. Like, nothing is okay until we start winning games. And I feel like just an attitude shift is what they're going for.
AJ Johnson to the Bucks. We were watching it live. And
You were like a proud mom.
He was. You were like a proud mom. I was so excited. I have known this player, AJ Johnson, 6'5 combo guard, only, I don't know, a buck 65, 67, soaking wet, was also originally committed to Texas. Imagine if Ron Holland and AJ Johnson played college basketball instead of going. That would have been a thing. That would have been amazing. But he elected at the last minute to go play in the NBL for the Illawarra Hawks. I actually went to Australia to see him play. They were using him as just a running baseline to baseline on the wing. They weren't utilizing him as a primary ball handler or even a combo guard. He was more like a three. Didn't get a lot of looks, didn't get a lot of playing time. Fun fact, Jason Tatum's dad took over as head coach halfway through the season, Justin Tatum, so he was getting more touches, more playing time, but was so much better in practice. And this is a guy who has been in the gym with Jalen Green, Houston Rockets guard, since he was in eighth grade. So you're starting to see similarities, similar mannerisms. And I think when he played so well at the combine in the 5-on-5 scrimmages, that's when the Milwaukee Bucks zeroed in and they're like, okay, we are going to take a swing on this guy.
Yeah.
But it was shocking.
When they showed him on TV, I was like, oh, he's 12 years old.
Yeah.
I could not believe that that's the guy that the Milwaukee Bucks selected as a first round pick. Like, he looks so young.
Yes.
And he is so young.
Yes.
Right. But he extremely raw. And you know what? The Milwaukee Bucks, they have a former MVP. What's his name?
Giannis.
Giannis. Yeah. Remember Giannis?
Yeah. Giannis. I think I've heard him.
Same type of thing where it's just like, this guy is raw. He's a project. Just wait. So Milwaukee Bucks obviously are, you know, they got a heat check there with this kid. But he was swimming in his jacket. I mean, he was tiny out there. And I just feel like, could they have gotten him in the second round if they traded down? You know, try basically, look, if we like this kid, is anyone going to be taken? They probably heard. They must have heard.
Yeah, they must have
somebody
heard.
Somebody wanted him at the back end of that first round. Because that, to me, man, I was seeing some mocks and some boards that had him at, you know, 50s, 60s, not even getting drafted. But you know who loved that kid? Right here.
I did.
Yes.
Eight out of 10 of my mocks, I had him in the first round.
Yes.
Can we just do a round of applause for KP tonight? KP, you called the Charlotte Hornets with the sixth pick.
Yes.
Yep.
Right? And you called this where you're like, this guy is going a lot higher than people expect. Yes. And when he got drafted, he wasn't even in the green room. He was up in the stands with his family.
He didn't get a green room.
So I just think, what a story that is.
Yeah.
I want to meet his agent.
Bill Duffy.
Bill Duffy is a legend in the sport. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he did an amazing job with this one because what did he average at?
2.8.
2.8.
To me, that tells a story. Because to average 2.8 points, not be a Zach Edey where you have this size, this, you know, once in a lifetime type thing. You know, it's not you're a project, you're a 6'10 pogo stick. This is a 6'6 guy averaging 2.8 points. You're not supposed to get drafted in the first round.
No.
Unless basketball people
saw
him and saw the basketball ability and said, we're not worried about the 2.8. That don't mean nothing to us because we know what you're capable of. So to me, that told the whole story.
All right, moving on. Narratives. I remember we started the draft and I said, this is going to be complete chaos. Mm-hmm. There's going to be trades. No one knows what's going to happen. It was pretty chalk, the first four picks. Mm-hmm. It kind of fell in order. We had Alex Saar, who said, I'm not working out for Atlanta Hawks. I don't want anything to do with you guys. Okay, fine. We'll take Risha Shea. Yeah. Then he fell to two, went to the Wizards. Three, Reed Shepard, your favorite guy ever.
That's my guy.
And then Stephon Castle anchoring here. The defense with Wembanyama. And then we got kind of like a shock Ron Holland that we just talked about. But still pretty chalk. And we have to talk about the Wimby wave with the phrase that I'm, going to coin. And when you guys look at the French prospects that were taken, there were four in the first round. What stands out to you the most about the talent coming up?
Projects. they're young. The thing about Victor Wembanyama is he's such a magnetic personality too. And these kids were watching Tony Parker and Nick Batum, who's still in the league, by the way. It's so impressive to see that he's still kicking it in the league. But they're all growing up watching, Tony Parker do his thing for the San Antonio Spurs. And now Victor Wembanyama's on the Spurs. And they're going to be in the same NBA with those guys. Yes. And it's just really cool to see. And I'm fired up, not just for these Frenchmen in the, draft, also for the Summer Olympics, just the fact that we're going to be able to watch the Wemby wave in action. All the Frenchmen are looking at the league and saying, like, it's our time now.
Yes. Yeah.
It is our time. And Risha Shea, I'm not the biggest fan of Risha Shea.
Yeah.
I have my questions in terms of his ability to stretch the floor reliably because we've seen him shoot much better this season than he did previously, 30% from downtown last year and 70% from the free throw line in each of the last 2 years. I don't know how real the three-point shooting is. I see him more of a Kyle Kuzma, Trevor Ariza type. But then you look at just like how much energy is around French basketball right now. It's hard to argue that they didn't steal the show.
Yeah. Yeah. The NBA wants to be a global game. It has been an ever evolving one. And this French wave, the Wimby wave, is only adding to that. Where now other countries see, France did it.
Yeah.
So now what other countries, who has the next Wimby or the next generational talent that then inspires the guys behind that person? I think it just really shows that the NBA is doing what it set out to do. And it's going to be a real challenge for the U.S.-born players to feel like they're still the top dogs because they'll say they are. They want to. And at every level, they want to feel this way. High school, college, into the NBA. Yeah. But it is clear what the international talent is doing. Look at the last MVPs.
Yes.
Fun
fact.
Yeah.
NBA MVPs for the last six seasons were all international prospects, which is crazy. I think the first team all-NBA team were all international players except for Jason Tatum this year.
Wow.
Is the only American-born all-NBA first team. So when you look at Atlanta, number one, Zachary Risha Shea, Washington, Alex Saar, number six, Charlotte, Tijan Salon, and then also Paco Mdatie, 25. Mm. And they're all from France. And guess what, you guys? It's not ending anytime soon. Next year, Nolan Traore. Saturday, I leave for Istanbul to go watch the FIBA U17 World Cup. They have a 15-year-old there playing up who's already signed with Wembanyama's agent, Buna Enjai, and his name's Nathan Solomon. So he's the next one up. He's why everyone's flocking to Istanbul. But we have to talk about another international guy.
Wait, can I get in your, check baggage.
She just dropped that like
everyone's going
to
Istanbul except for us. No, we not. I mean that is crazy. 15 years old.
15. He's already.
What's his position?
He's a wing. He's 6'8" at 15 already. He's good. Really smooth jumper. Nikola Topic.
Yeah.
Anytime Sam Presti does anything, draft grade all automatic A+. Mm-hmm. Anytime. Like, he has the vision. He has the rebuild vision. Nikola Topic going number 12 to Oklahoma City. They did it once before with Chet Holmgren, letting him sit through a season and really come back full strength from his injury, watch a lot of film, get into the system, learn the OKC culture. They're going to have to do that again with Nikola Topic, who, by the way, has been called the Serbian Josh Giddey. So they trade Josh Giddey to Chicago, and then they draft the Serbian version of Josh Giddey. Top five talent projected all season long. Were you surprised at all at that pick?
I'm surprised that he fell that far. But OKC has shown with their medical staff, Chet Holmgren missed the entire year last year, and he didn't miss a single game this year. Think about that.
Yeah.
Think about that. It's kind of like, you know, Brooke Lopez, how he always had foot problems, and then he's become a beacon of durability at the latter stages of his career. OKC does that continually, where they get these guys who have, you know, red flags on their medicals or whatever, and then suddenly they're playing all 82. So the fact that he was able to fall to OKC just seems like it's unfair. You know, because Sam Presti's been running laps around the league, just how well he does at the draft. Yeah. Talk about Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant and then Serge Ibaka, James Harden, like back to back to back to back. He's doing it again.
Yeah.
He's doing it again. And I kind of feel like every year we do this where it's like, you know, Jesse Pinkman in Breaking Bad, where it's like, we can't let him get away with this. Like the Thunder are doing it again, where a guy that if he didn't have the ACL partial tear, I feel like he would be a candidate to go number one, and they just got him outside the top 10.
Yeah.
I really like his game. He seems so smooth. To me, he's the best player in this draft, or as good as anyone else, in the pick and roll and making reads. Don't know how well he consistently shoots it yet behind a screen, but it kind of reminds me of SGA. In a way, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, where Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, his knock coming in was his jump shot. You know, can he develop a consistent jump shot? And he's gotten better and better over the course of time. And he's become a player that's so smooth and so sly that even when people know he wants to drive, he still gets to his spots. And I feel like Topic can do the same thing to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say he'll be an MVP candidate, finish number two like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander did. But I feel like it allows OKC to continue playing the way they want to play.
Yes.
So when both of those guys are on the floor, whether it's together or one's in for instead of the other, they can still have a similar level of effectiveness no matter which one is in.
Sam Presti, man, mastermind.
At it again.
Yes. Okay, steals of the night. Tom, let's start with you.
I love Devin Carter so much. I can't believe the Sacramento Kings were able to get him at 13. I really can't. Devin Carter could have been a top five pick in my book. I think he was probably at number five. If the Pistons got him, I would have loved that pick. He slid to number 13. He's got a huge wingspan. He had 9 rebounds per 36 minutes from a 6'2 guy at Providence, where he's improving every single year. Yes. He's the son of Anthony Carter, longtime NBA player. This is a steal for the Sacramento Kings. And they needed to get better defensively. Mm-hmm. The Sacramento Kings are fine offensively. They needed to get better defensively. And they got probably the best perimeter defender, proven perimeter defender in the draft in Devin Carter. And look, I've written about it before. Second-generation players in the NBA overachieve all the time.
Yes.
You look at Devin Booker, Domantas Sabonis, a guy named Steph Curry. All these guys and second-generation NBA players, they do much better than expected. And I think the next one on the list is Devin Carter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lamar, who's your guy?
Dalton Connect. The fact that I did not expect him to go out of the top 10. I don't know if you guys did.
No.
Yeah.
Buckets.
I wouldn't expect it. Yeah. And the Lakers got exactly what they needed and didn't have to give up, like, size. So they wanted shooting. They didn't have to go and get a small guard. They wanted, you know, versatility, switchability. They got that with a guy who you're not giving up on one side of the floor. Offensively, he can play off of LeBron and AD, which you have to be able to do. You're not going to be the initiator a lot of times when it matters in meaningful minutes. But also, though, you can give him the ball and say, go get us something.
Yes.
So the fact that he can do both of those things at his size, he will get after it defensively. It's just like the perfect pick. I don't know. Was there a better L.A. pick? The only one I could think of is maybe Tristan Da Silva. Mm-hmm. I thought it would have been good if he had gone to the Lakers. Yep. But the fact they got Connect,
And he could play right now.
You're not giving up. You're not sacrificing timeline, position, nothing.
Do you think that they smartened up after last year's pick, kind of drafting more of a project in Jalen Hood-Schifino and leaving Jaime Jaquez on the table?
Oh,
so
for
when you're presented with that same sort of scenario, you go ahead and you draft that four or five year player. that is ready to go.
I mean, I bet JJ Redick's already like pulling all-nighters. Like I can't wait to coach this kid. Yeah. You know, like I think when you talk about the Lakers, you want to have a guy that can like LeBron, believe it or not, is not going to play forever. Mm-hmm. So right. If you're going to draft here and draft a guy that you want to play with LeBron James, Connect is the dude. Yes. And so when he kept falling, I was like, oh my, the Lakers are going to get him.
Yeah.
The Lakers are going to get him. And JJ Redick, AD, LeBron, they're all going to be doing backflips. Yes. This guy.
My guy is not so much as, I mean, I guess he's a steal. And I think he is the guy in this NBA draft. I know you love Reed Sheppard. I love the player that was picked right after Reed Sheppard. Stephon Castle.
Yeah.
Stephon Castle, 6'5" guard from UConn. What I love most about him is he struggled from three the entire season. He had to come back from a knee injury, was really trying to find his chemistry in the backcourt, was patient with Dan Hurley in his minutes and just trying to figure it out. Then out of nowhere in the NCAA tournament, he just came alive, especially in the Final Four, the biggest stage in college basketball, especially in that game when they played Alabama. Mm-hmm. And Nate Oates, he was so disrespectful to Stephon Castle. He basically said, all right, we are going to sag off you. Mm-hmm. And UConn, if you are going to beat us, it's going to be you, freshman Steph Castle. Mm-hmm. And what did he do? He didn't shy away from the big moment. He hit 21 points. He had 21 points, one of the best game of his season. Followed that up with 15 points against Purdue to help them become back-to-back champions. And I think when scouts saw that and what he brings to the table defensively, Brian Wright has to be thinking, like, this guy is going to be the anchor in the defense alongside Wembanyama. And he also has that upside as a playmaker. I think he's going to be one of those two-way guys that's going to be a long-standing starter in the NBA. And when we look back, you always say there's always all-stars, there's always guys in this draft. There's going to be three. Mm-hmm. You think one of them is going to be Reed Sheppard. I think one of them is going to be Steph Castle.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break and come back with a look ahead to the second round and the loaded 2025 NBA draft class. Welcome back to On the Clock with Kristen Peek. I'm Kristen Peek, joined by Lamar and Tom, my two co-hosts for draft night. We have been in the trenches all night, you guys, and we still have another round tomorrow to go. Round two, look ahead. There's a player on the board that I don't know if we or anybody in the media has talked enough about. Bronny James, the oldest son of LeBron James. Why do you think, here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I, Lamar, have had this question or had this discussion, and I think we need to have it again.
Okay.
Lakers are at 55. Mm-hmm. I have said probably since January or February, he is going to be a pick at the Lakers. Mm-hmm. And then you see everything that Rich Paul is saying. We're only taking guaranteed money. You have LeBron, who's the most influential, calculated player in the NBA, who says, I'm going to play my last season with my son. Their home is established here. LeBron has said, I like playing for the Lakers. I would love to finish my career with the Lakers, but his option's up in July. Okay? Mm-hmm. I think the sea is going to part, and every team is just going to say, okay, Lakers, you take him. You think otherwise. Why?
I think it is possible to be otherwise. So I, like you guys, know the NBA to be a business. These owners, the team governors, they're making a ton of money. They're doing a great job running these organizations. Why, if I'm a team owner who is not concerned about clutch sports, I'm not. Now, mind you, I get the general manager might be saying, hey, I need y'all to stay out of this because I'm the one dealing with clutch and Rich Paul. So even though you guys want to try to maybe get Bronny before the Lakers and try to lure LeBron, as a general manager, I'm the one that has to deal with it. All it takes is one team owner to say, I don't care about all that. Mm-hmm. I want my arena full. I want the guy who's known as one of the top two, three, whatever your number is for him, players of all time. I am willing to do it. All it takes is one team to say, we just want to be the show. We have watched y'all talk about this young man who's a second round pick for months. Oh my gosh. What happens if we get him? Y'all gonna be talking about us. Mm-hmm. We get LeBron. Oh, y'all talking about us the whole time. And there's some owners that like attention a little bit more than others. and I think would revel in the idea of taking Bronny James and luring LeBron James away from Los Angeles. It will be the NBA story, and I think it is a worthwhile roll of the dice for someone who's willing to do it.
Okay. Biggest moment of the draft tonight that made me go, huh, was the New York Knicks trading.
See, Tom, there's back. No way. Tom, tell him. What the Knicks do?
They got the 51st pick. Wait, remind me again. Where did the Lakers pick?
55.
55.
Okay. Oh, 55 minus.
We know that LeBron James is a mountain climber. Okay, he climbed the mountain of winning in Miami with Dwayne Wade. When everyone wanted them to lose, they won. He climbed that mountain. He went back home.
You see the vision.
Climbed the mountain in Cleveland, brought them a championship. He can't follow in the shadows of Kareem and Magic and Kobe in L.A. and win a championship. Hmm. He did that, too. What mountain is left to climb other than the Empire State of Mind?
Right. No, there's no mountain left. He's 40 years old. Right. He sees his retirement. It's right there. It's right there in front of him. He's comfortable in L.A. His son is only 19 years old. His youngest son, Bryce, is a senior in high school at Sierra Canyon. I don't think you realize how close this family is. I've spent a lot of time around the James family. They are a very close-knit family. There's zero chance.
Zero.
Zero chance
he leaves the team?
There's zero chance that he's going to go to New York. They are not going to pack up their family.
So then you really think LeBron is willing to have his son on an NBA team never play with him?
No. I'm saying that I think Rich Paul and Clutch Sports is a massive agency, and they have that pull. Because if you are going to play chicken with Rich Paul, he's going to say, don't do that. You don't know what future players he's going to have. You don't Correct. Know what sort of conversations he's going to have. Why is that worth it? For LeBron James and a 6'2 guard that you're going to have to keep once LeBron retires?
Do you think these team owners always make good decisions?
No, I don't. But This to me is a done deal. Lakers to 55. Okay. And I guess we won't have to wait long.
We're going to find out.
Yeah, we're going to find out.
I just think there is some team owner that is having extensive discussions.
I agree.
About this exact scenario, knowing what's at stake, knowing the fact that they're going to have it out with Clutch for the rest of time. And they are having the discussions and weighing the pros and cons.
The only thing that I could see happening is the Phoenix pick. And they find a way to get in and take them. That's the only situation because it's a short flight from L.A. to Phoenix. You're still on the West Coast. And when you have $1 billion, you can play taxi with private jets and go back and forth to Bryce's high school game at Sierra Canyon or whatever is happening. Okay. Let's move on.
Okay. All right.
Other players left on the board. I'm going to run through the top five players, and then you guys tell me who's your favorite player and the most surprising that you're surprised that he's still there in the second day. Kyle Filipowski, Duke center. Mm. Tyler Kolek, Marquette point guard. Johnny Furphy, Kansas shooting guard. Cam Christie, the shooting guard out of Minnesota. Tyler Smith, the G League Ignite forward. Tom?
I think it's Kolek. Kolek is a guy who led this draft class in assists per 36 minutes.
Yep.
He's a guy that Marquette continually churns out NBA players, overachieving NBA players, where you talk about, you start with Jimmy Butler, right? D Wade, we knew he was going to be amazing when he came into the league. Wasn't necessarily an overachiever. But you look at Jay Crowder, you look at Sam Hauser, you look at Steve Novak, discount double check, Steve Novak, who carved out an NBA career against a lot of odds. People didn't think of him as an NBA player, even though he could shoot the rock. Wes Matthews Jr. Didn't even get drafted out of Marquette. And they continually churn NBA players. And I'm surprised that Tyler Kolek, with the passing ability in today's NBA, that no one took him in the first round. And AJ got picked 23. Mm-hmm. I'm stunned that Tyler is still on the board. Mm.
I think Tyler Smith for me, but also Furphy.
Yeah.
Because he's a shooter.
Yes.
And everybody knows he's a shooter. And that's the number one skill right now that all NBA teams want. And he has size. Like, kind of like we were talking about Dalton Knecht with the size he has and the skill set. Furphy and Knecht are different players, but the shooting aspect, he could play on any team as a shooter. So I thought he would have gone, especially KP, after you gave us that great intel of him turning down the NIL deal.
Yes.
Like, that sounds like I'm only doing that if I'm going out in the first round. So him, and then Tyler Smith, I say him because to me, he just kind of has just an all-around game. Like, he just looks like an NBA player. The way he plays with the strength, the skill, Reminds me of Thaddeus Young in certain respects. Played with the G League at night, so learning the NBA game already. You know, being around Jason Hart and all the things that comes with that, thought would serve him well and put him in a spot to be taken in that first round. But I would expect him to go rather early in the second round.
I'm a little surprised Kyle Filipowski is still on the board, to be honest. This is a player who was projected in the lottery all season long, 7-footer, sophomore who elected to return to Duke after his freshman year. And he needed double hip surgery. He had double hip surgery. That's it tough. Actually made him... This is shocking because I've watched a ton of film on him. I think it actually made him more mobile. So, oh, wow. But at 19, double hip surgery, that's a little alarming. But they ran everything through Filipowski. Jeremy Roach and Kyle Filipowski ran the show at Duke. And so for him to elect to go back and improve his draft stock, and for him to be sitting there in the green room, mm-hmm. him and Johnny Furphy were sitting there in the green room, and they had to leave. Go home and wait to hear their name tomorrow. That's got to hurt.
That's rough.
You had head coach John Shire there, like so happy that Jared McCain, is going to Philly, and then to sit there and not see your other guy taken in the first round.
It was bad enough that they lost to NC State twice. And now he's got to sit in the green room. I mean, that's tough. That's tough. But you know what? He'll make millions in the NBA, and he'll be okay.
He is. Yeah. I'm looking at the picks, and like I think he is a lock. I can't see Utah.
Right.
I can't see Utah passing on him, mm-hmm. especially in the backcourt. If they're gonna keep Walker Kessler, I mean that is just it screams a Utah pick for me.
Mm. I totally agree with that. Mm. That
seems like
a great
Tyler Kolek, 31 to Toronto, probably. Maybe Kyle Filipowski second off the board at 32, and we'll see how everything shakes up. Mm. Okay. Friday morning is when I start the new draft cycle,
okay.
the 2025 okay. NBA draft.
You what guys, are we looking forward to?
I am so excited.
I think
about
she's already
draft.
Started it. I, no, she like, started. The way she's...
No, I did. I said to my editor on Friday, I said, I'm going to start doing the 2025 mock to give myself a break from this class because I've just done so much on this class. But you guys, when I tell you, like, next year's draft class is a monster, and it's a monster at the top. And there's a reason why. Right after Final Four, all of the scouts and executives, we all go to – I'm not – after the Final Four, mm-hmm. NBA scouts and executives, they go to the Nike Hoop Summit. And there's a reason why almost every NBA executive mm-hmm. was there this year. There were hundreds of scouts. And it was buzzing. It mm-hmm. was buzzing. And that was because of the talent on the floor.
Who
Cooper
Flagg.
Cooper Flagg is the number one high school recruit coming out. 6'9" forward, point forward, so versatile, best rim protector, I think, in high school basketball. And they're also, he's going in there playing with Kamon Malawak, who is going to be another, he's going to have the control of the paint, right? Mm. So that's going to be the dynamic front court there.
Okay.
Ace Bailey going to Rutgers, playing alongside Dylan Harper. The two of them are the two highest recruits Rutgers has ever landed in the history. So that's a huge win for Rutgers. And when you look at those two and you look at the teams that are possibly positioning themselves in a favorable spot to land them, mm-hmm. a.k.a. tanking, what stands out to you about next year's class?
Do you think Cooper Flagg is going to be as good as Zach Edey?
Stop it.
I'm just saying. I'm sorry. I had to say it. Well, Cooper Flagg, think about Filipowski. Like, he can't go back to Duke. He saw the writing on the wall with these two guys coming in at Duke. Yeah. Reminds me of all the classes at Kentucky where they, you know.
Are recruited over, yes.
You're like, hey, I might not have done well for my draft stock this year, but I can't go back to Kentucky with the next fleet of guys that Calipari's got bringing in. And so for Filipowski, like, the writing's on the wall. Like, I got to stay in the draft. He doesn't have the first round pick. But he can't go back to Duke because these guys are coming in.
Yeah.
So Cooper Flagg's, I think Brooklyn Nets, the reason why they traded Mikal Bridges
trying to clear it away.
Is to clear the lane for a Cooper Flagg because he is the real deal. And Ace Bailey, if it ends up being Ace Bailey for them,
consolation.
They're going to be great.
There was two stretches of games in December where I saw Ace Bailey play, and he is a dynamite scorer. And he's one of those guys, I mean, he's a high-volume shooter. He's going to take 20 shots a game and just not care, right? Mm-hmm. But he makes a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And in back-to-back games at City of Palms, which is another event that NBA scouts mm-hmm. can go to. So he did this in front of NBA scouts, some of them which were going back and forth between the G League winner showcase. He had 40 points and 10 rebounds and 7 assists in one game. And the very next game, he had 42 points.
Sounds
I don't
like
know
Zach Edey numbers to me.
Oh my! Stop it! Stop it! These two players are like as different from this draft where you're drafting complementary pieces.
Yeah.
These are two cornerstone players.
Mm-hmm. See, it's these kind of players that I hear about coming up where I never say the NBA has all the best players in the world. I say it's the best collection of players.
Yeah.
Because somewhere in various places, there are players that an NBA team, if they can take them now, like if an NBA team could have taken Cooper Flagg tonight.
100%. Number one.
Number one, plug and play. He's starting over somebody on somebody's mm-hmm. roster. And so that's the exciting part about all this is getting the head start like you're doing on who is coming up next. Who are these people? So you said at the top of that draft, it's going to be loaded. How's it looking midway through late in that first round?
It's doing great. And I'll tell you why. NIL has changed that because players who are looking at the draft, testing the waters, getting feedback. Oh, well, we'd get you on a two-way. I can go back to school. Yeah. And make $500,000 in NIL money. Mm. So when you think of that, the game is getting older, which means the talent is getting better because they're having time to develop. Mm. Are we still going to see probably 8, 10, 12 one-and-done prospects? Absolutely. But in terms of the meat of the draft next year, it's very similar to this. There's going to be a lot of value in 2, 3, or 4-year players.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Anything else to say before we close out, Tom? You want the last word?
I love my son, Reed Shepard. I'm surprised. I'll just say this. I'm surprised Houston didn't trade that pick because I feel like they want to win right now. And, you know, he's young. But I love him as a shooter. He's going to have a great mentor in mm-hmm. Fred VanVleet, mm-hmm. A guy who was doubted, not drafted, a guy who proved himself everything he got in this league, he earned. And I think it's fascinating to me is the guy, the Reed Shepard, shot over 50% from three-point land, and he goes to a team that wants to win right now, and Ime Udoka running that squad. Mm-hmm. Could end up being the steal of the draft there if you get a guy who's going to be an all-star great shooter. But to me, I'm surprised Brooklyn didn't jump back into this draft. You know, so we'll see. But it's the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes starting now.
Yeah, that's what we have to look forward to. Yeah.
I like the uncertainty of the first rounds, just not knowing what's going to happen. It to me, it's reflective of the NBA where it's at right now, where, you feel like the Celtics are the best team, but you wouldn't be shocked if they didn't win the title next year.
Yeah.
Just like this past year, I think the Nuggets were the team expected to come out the West. They didn't. It was a surprise, but it wasn't shocking. There's a lot of parity. There's a lot of things that are kind of spread out. It's hard to predict things, harder than it usually has been in the past. And that's just kind of how this draft has been. So I'd expect round two to be the same thing. And in closing for me, I just want to say it's been an honor watching you work, KP. We're at dinner last night. Some news pops off. She's out. She's going back to go record something. Tonight we're doing the first round and in between, she's got to make a Zach Edey clip, the Zach Edey diss track, but just, you know, she's keeping his eye on him at the same time. Like, really, the way you're plugged into everything, it's my first time being able to work with you.
Thank you.
It's really cool. So I appreciate what you do.
Thank you. I mean, everyone that follows me knows that I have no life outside of basketball and my dog, Gary.
Gary, I was going to say, don't leave out Gary.
Shout out to Gary.
We've learned a lot about Gary.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Yeah, this was so much fun. That is it for us today. Thanks to Lamar and Tom for hanging with me during our live coverage of the first round and this podcast. Thanks to John and Brett and Evan and everyone else behind the scenes making everything look and sound great. Until next year, we're out.